From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Our friend Ken Drews and I both love leaves, and so do the naughty fur-bearing herbivores who have been visiting our gardens with a vengeance this season. But that's another story. Today's topic is leaves to love, from the gardener's point of view, not the woodchucks or the rabbits. But first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
Ken Drews, friend of many years and author and photographer of 20 garden books, including The New Shade Garden and Making More Plants, and most recently, The Sensual Garden, about fragrance, is back today to talk about what's getting our gardens through the mid-season slump, leaves. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Margaret. You started with the herbivores, and I was already thinking of snails.
Oh, I guess they're herbivorous too, but they're not fur bearers.
No.
Yeah, and no four legs. How is it going with the bunny patrol?
Oh gosh. You know, in the past we actually had one bunny at a time, and people said that's impossible. But I guess the baby bunny was dropped by a hawk or something, because that was when the bridges were grates instead of paved, and we didn't have any animals because no animals could get on the island.
Right.
But they paved the bridge. And anyway, this is the first time this has happened, but it's like Australia. You know, it's hares are on the march.
My number six, Woody number six, went into witness relocation yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So before we start, I should say that with the transcript of the show on awaytogarden.com, we're going to give away a copy of The New Shade Garden, the New Shade Garden, not meaning it just came out, but meaning it's not your original Shade Garden book, correct?
That is correct. And it's different. It's not a reworking of the original very popular book.
No.
It's a different take, and it has a lot to do with climate change, dealing with that.
Yeah, and it has a lot of foliage in it. So I thought it'd be a good one for this topic to share with people. So we'll have that with the transcript. We're also going to show you, yes, and we're also going to each gather and show off some leaves in the week ahead on Instagram. So I'll give the link to that too with the transcript. You always have been showing some incredible images lately of crazy things, including some really beautiful things with leaves, like I think it was a gold variegated lily of the valley, maybe.
Oh, yeah, sure.
What's that?
It's a gold variegated lily. No, it's a striped lily of the valley. It's just like the other one. I don't know if it's really quite so aggressive. I bought one little plant which had like three leaves, maybe 5 years ago, and now I could go into the business. This thing was like $30. It's probably $15 now, but I've got plenty of it, and it is beautiful.
Yeah, it has a green pinstripe on the yellow leaf, or was it a yellow pinstripe on the green leaf? I can't
remember. Yellow lines on the green leaf, and they're
okay.
They're parallel with the way that the leaf goes. I don't know what you call that.
Beautiful. I call it beautiful. I called it beautiful. So yeah, so foliage. So if not for the leaves, and I have to say, with as dry as it's been here, I don't know if you're as dry, it's a little tricky to keep all the big leafed things that are my particular obsession happy. So leaves, what's your thing in foliage, and why? Why foliage? Maybe you should tell everybody why we're both leaf obsessed.
There's so many reasons. I'm leaf obsessed because I love the way you put it when in an email to me. I'm 60% sun at best. So it's kind of a shady garden. And some things, a lot of things flower in the shade, but they're, you know, it's not the big showy flowers. So I depend on the foliage, and the foliage lasts three seasons. Flowers sometimes, well, flowers are fleeting.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a flower, the longest 2 weeks would be incredible. Something flowering for 2 weeks. There's so many things in the garden that flower for a day. They don't call them daylilies for nothing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I love the color and the texture and the form and the mass of, and putting it all together, having something tall and skinny with dark green leaves and something fat and round and bushy with lots of texture. And when I look out at the garden, it's so incredibly colorful, and there's not a flower in sight. And I've got that for months.
Right. Right. So I don't know where we want to begin about.
Tell me about your big boys.
The big boys. I don't even know. I suppose it began with a plant that maybe I wish I'd never started growing, which was for sale at a local nursery several decades ago when I first started gardening here. Pedicytes, it's X hybridus. It's not actually japonicus. It was sold to me as japonicus, but it's pedicytes. It's a butterbur, I guess it is, from Asia. It's big, tall, thick stems that hold up a very large, very, very large leaf, a couple of feet, a few feet across. Green, it's just green, but it looks very like something you'd find in the rainforest or something. So very bold, almost tropical feeling. And I brought home a pot of it a million years ago and put it in a spot in the backyard. And it's a very aggressive plant, it turns out. And again, this is decades ago, who knew, whatever. And so I have to kind of trench around it or weed around it to keep it from going sideways everywhere. But so I have this big circle of it in the backyard, which I love. And so I suppose that was one, and around the same time that got me addicted to the big leaves. And at the same time, a former botanic garden it used to be part of the New York Botanical Garden, the Cary Arboretum, it was called at the time, the Cary Institute now of Ecosystem Studies, which is about 40 minutes away from here, but I was a weekend gardener and it was on the drive, I passed it on the way, and I saw they had a plant sale one Friday, and I stopped in and they had two plants that were in their garden, Astolboides, which has very big leaves in the shade, and Rogersia, a cousin of it, also. And I brought home pots of those two. So I think that's where my craziness began. The bigger, the better.
All my life, knowing you, I thought that these were intentional things. That smart the way she planted that. And you have the giant, which we used to call Japonicus giganteus, pedicytes, and Fuki. And I thought you got that at the Japanese Stroll Garden, the John P. Hume's Japanese
Stroll. In Long Island. No, I did not.
Where I first saw that plant.
Yeah.
And people sell it, but with the wrong name, and it's not that plant, because it's actually very hard to find that plant that you have. See, I could sell my Lily of the Valley, and you could sell your pedicytes, but you have to tell people, in both cases, this plant needs to be edited or put for the Lily of the Valley. I have it in a raised bed, in two raised beds, actually. So it can't go everywhere, although it wants to.
Right. So, less precious, but very big and bold. I have a giant mass of rhubarb, just edible, plain old rhubarb, perennial, wonderful. Just a week or two ago, sort of late June, I don't harvest the stems early because when they're the most tender and small, because I love the look of the plant. Mm-hmm. And so I wait till a little later, and I know that's not, cooking wise, maybe they're going to be a little more fibrous, but whatever. And, but it's this big mass of it surrounding a bench on the edge of the vegetable garden. And to me, that's just as beautiful, right? It doesn't have to be a rarity. It could be rhubarb, I think.
I can't grow Astolboides, don't know why, and I can't grow rhubarb. I think maybe it's that you have more acidic, because my soil is kind of alkaline.
Yeah.
And we should mention don't eat the leaves for the rhubarb. But also I'm going to say something you probably know. You can freeze rhubarb raw, and it just freezes great. You don't have to cook it first.
And that's what I do when I cut it down again, late June-ish, not as early as most people would. I cut it down and I, you know, dice the stems and obviously compost the leaves, dice the stems, and I put them in bags in the freezer. And if there are still strawberries, I make some strawberry rhubarb compote for the freezer also. Or if there's none, I just wait and use it later in something. But yeah, it's great to have and it's so easy to work with. So, but that gives you that sort of big look of the tropics, even though it's a bone hardy plant that hails from Siberia originally. So,
that's probably why I can't grow it.
Yeah. But I love that. I love that oddness of big in, mm-hmm. in my cold zone. That's I think what does it for me. But yeah, it wasn't a deliberate intention. It just started with those couple of plants and then got to be a habit. But you have some big, bold things too.
I do. I have Dharmra, which is a native of California, but does just fine here. I have that Ligularia japonica, which for some reason people don't grow that. This is a mystery, because that's an easy to grow plant. And I have it in a place where the snails would decimate it if they were interested, but apparently they're not that interested. But you know, you have the big bold leaves, and I have sort of the pointillism version of texture and color and leaves. I have so many tiny leaf things. All together, they make a mass like boxwood. But, the colors. Like the weeping pear, it's silver. It looks like an olive tree. Until the leaves turn black and fall off. But that's another story.
The Ligularia that you just mentioned. So to just describe it to people, how would you describe it?
Wow, that's a good question.
Fringy. Well, it's
lobed leaves, and they're, I guess they're sort of palmate, like a hand, but they're ferny. They're feathery.
Yeah. And big. So it's a big mound of this low down, and then right around this time of year, it sends up big, tall stems with gold daisy
garbanzo beans.
Garbanzo bean pods that then open into sort of these gold, like daisy-ish things.
And every year, I think I'm going to cut them off, and then I end up liking them.
Yeah, it has great seed heads too. They're kind of crazy looking. It holds on to its seeds.
It's a wild and crazy plant.
And the thing that's great for me about it is it's later. So I have this one big mass of hellebores, shiny, low, almost evergreen leaves, right? People know what hellebores are. But it was just kind of a monotony eventually. And so when Ligularia japonica came into the market or whatever, I bought a few plants and I kind of tucked them in every so often in that sheet of the lower evergreen shiny-leafed hellebores. And it's matte leafed and very textural and very big leaves, quite different and higher up. And it's like, it gives me a second season and a second dimension in that same bed. So sometimes you can take one of these big leaf plants and, you know, like interrupt a sort of sheet of ground cover, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So I think it's great for that too.
You know, you're talking about ground cover, and I have in dry shade, Brunnera macrophylla. And some of it looks like Jack Frost, which has silver lines on the leaves. And it's just a carpet of Brunnera. And it blooms in the spring with wands of wonderful blue flowers. But I'm surprised. I never thought that plant was going to act like this. It's just a complete ground cover, and the weeds don't come up in it. And it's beautiful. I've tried all the different very hard to grow kinds. I don't know. Do you grow some of the Brunnera? Perennial forget-me-not?
Not really. I've tried over the years a few times, and this is a terrible thing to admit because I know it's such a treasured color, but I don't really have much that's blue. I'm not a blue person. I have one blue, I mean, I have a lot of purple things, but the true blue color, like the Brunnera flowers you said are blue, you know, I have Mertensia, common name for that? Mertensia virginica, bluebells. It's a native bluebells. I have that, which has a blue flower, but I don't really have much else that's blue. So they didn't really fit with my raucous color scheme, I guess. Mm. You know, I have a lot of other weird colors mostly. So you said you have a lot of little things and more pointillist and so forth. I mean, so some examples
I guess about the tiniest is Arctic willow. Do you know that Salix?
Yes.
And it's very blue, but not blue flowers. The leaves are blue, and I trim that every spring before it leaves out, and then it just makes this cloud of silvery blue. That's a wonderful plant.
Does it have, I don't know what the species is. I can't remember. Do you remember? I'll look it up before for the transcript.
It's Salix something nana. Purpuria.
Okay.
It's an odd name. Yeah. Salix purpuria nana.
Yeah. So that's fine textured, but very distinctive.
Very fine textured. And I was trying to think of, do you remember a plant called Eleutherococcus?
Yes.
Is that its name? That plant got its name changed.
It has a different name now. Yeah, Acanthopanax.
Acanthopanax, Aurelia. It's had so many names, but I think you can find it under Eleutherococcus siboldianus variegata.
Whatever that means.
It's got thorns, but it's their five. They're like maple leaves almost. They're five lobed, very fine texture. I guess the inch and a half across, and it just covers itself in these beautiful variegated leaves with a lot of variety.
It can even be trained like up a wall or an espalier. You know, flat.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's great against a dark wall or something. Yeah, yeah. Do you grow, so leaves, wanting the leaves of something and wanting them maybe, there's a lot of trees that have beautiful leaves and, or large shrubs that have beautiful leaves. But if we want to bring those that foliage down to sort of more at the garden level, not up high, do you grow any cutback shrubs or tree-ish like things that you cut back and keep smaller so that you have the foliage on new shoots? Do you know what I mean?
I do. I have a catalpa that I cut back. I have a Polonia, but that's a totally different, although talk about big and bold. Do you know Polonia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I have a Polonia that's probably 15 years old. And every year in the spring, I cut it to about 4 inches. And it produces a juvenile shoot with leaves almost 2 feet across. And it goes up 15 feet or so. It goes to the second story of the house easily. And people stop and say, where'd you get that sunflower? I said, it's not a sunflower. And it's a bad weed.
It's a terrible weed. It's a tree. It's a tree. People may have seen it along the highways. Right. You know, it has beautiful purplish flowers and so forth.
Not if you cut it back.
Right. So you're growing it in the way that it's not invasive because you're growing it as a cutback shrub. And the catalpa, would that have big leaves too at an early age?
Yeah, not as big. And the one I have is gold. I guess the leaves are just under a foot across and they're kind of heart-shaped leaves. That's a nice one. You know, after we end talking to each other, I'm going to think of 40 things that I cut back for that effect.
Right. I don't do that so much. And I keep thinking, why don't I do that? Because in great gardens that I've visited, that's always a feature of, again, a way to bring the great leaves from a tree that would be, you know, 30 feet up in the air to bring them down to the garden level and often at a larger size.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but can you think of a couple of things that you might do that to or want to?
The two that you just said were ones I wondered about, that the catalpa especially, because I see catalpas around here. I mean, I know they'd work, right? I see them, you know, as trees. So
and I cut back that willow that we talked about, but you have to be sure that the plant you're cutting back has dormant buds, because you could cut back the wrong plant and that would be it.
Right.
Right. So you wouldn't want that.
Right. But I think that the expression in, you know, traditional horticulture was cut back shrubs or growing something as a cut back shrub. So I think if we look that up, we're going to get a good list. You know what I mean? I mean, people, if they want to investigate for their area, that would be the expression, I think, is cut back shrubs, right?
Yeah. Or a cut back, right?
Right. A cut back. Right. 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 Right.
I mean, you can call it stooling. It has a lot of names. People used to cut back things like willows to make firewood.
Yeah.
Because they and harvest it from plants that had endless dormant buds. They would cut them back, harvest the twigs in 2 years and cut them back again and just have wood.
Right. Or to make a fence or to use mm-hmm.
For wattle, wood. Right.
Right. Right. Another kind of, besides the bold plants, one of the other things that I'm particularly interested in foliage is at the beginning of the season.
Ooh.
Oh, you know what I'm going to say. The ones that come up, these unearthly red. Colors, like reddish and bluish and purplish, not green, as I say. Plants that emerge not green.
So that you're going to tell me what that is. It's something like acanocyanins or something.
Anthocyanins are the pigments. So not chlorophyll, but anthocyanins. And we think of those as, you know, those blue and red pigments as fall colors, right? When the chlorophyll mm-hmm. fades, we see those. But in some plants, they have it early in the season, maybe because it tastes bad. And so it's a way to prevent predation by herbivorous animals and insects. Maybe that's one of the theories.
I thought it was an antifreeze.
Yeah, I don't know. I know there's various things that it may do. It may help to absorb more light during the short leafless season in the canopy above, blah, blah, blah. But whatever, I've read a million research papers on it. But some peonies have that. Jeffersonia, the twin leaf, a native wildflower. Bleeding hearts even have it. I'm just interested in that as, you know, in other words, to enjoy the foliage at ground level when the garden is awakening as sort of an extra show from things.
Well, we're talking about three seasons, certainly.
Yeah. Any new acquisitions? We have a few minutes, you know, four minutes left.
I thought of something I cut back that I forgot. Cotinus grace.
Oh, yes.
All the cotinuses you can cut back. Those are, what are they called? Cotinus. Terrible.
Smoke bush,
right. Smoke well, bush. Grace is a hybrid between the European and the American, and it has big iridescent leaves, and that's a great cutback, and it just shoots up. And I think some of my favorite variegated plants, I love the Symphidum ex uplandicum Axminster gold. Do you know that plant?
No, but you're coming up with some Latin stuff going on here today.
What's
Symphidum comfrey. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know the plant that we both like and both have and have trouble saying? Do you know which one I mean? The Cynealisis.
Yeah.
And there's two of them. There's Aconitifolium, which I think is the better one. There's three because there's a hybrid. And Palmatum or something is the other one. But Aconitifolium, which means it has foliage like an aconitum. And what's that, monkshood?
Yes.
So that's almost indescribable. And it's in the daisy family, which is bizarre, to say the least.
So that's a real it plant right now, Cynealisis, or however we say it. So it's Cynealisis, Cynealisis. And it's really hot right now. Texturally.
I saw that plant probably 20 years ago when it was first discovered, you know, brought from China. James Waddick, Dr. Waddick brought it, and he was calling it rabbit umbrellas. But I don't think that's what they call it anymore.
That's hilarious. Rabbit umbrellas. It's so textural, so much like a doily or a lace, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. open and, it's incredible looking. So we're going to have pictures of all these. Of course, people I know are just ranting, but lots of pictures with the transcript of all of these. That's a great one. And again, when I first got the Astolboides or the Rodgersia, those were it plants at the moment. They weren't so right. widely available. And this is kind of a new one for unusual foliage.
Do you have anything silver?
I used to have a lot of silver things, and I don't too much. I have a big willow, which is the rosemary willow, Eleognos, Salix Eleognos, which is a silver long, a very linear, thin leaf. And I've let it grow into a tree, so it's a very unusual one. So that's a big silver mound.
I love that plant. And why did they change its name? Rosmarinifolius or whatever it was.
Right.
Rosmarinus. That was the perfect name. It looks like rosemary.
It looks like a giant rosemary bush. Right.
They changed the name.
Right.
I've Of course, you need sun for silver things usually, but I have one Artemisia Silver King that does quite okay in the shade, and it's not a monster in the shade. And I have a terrific Pulmonaria, a lungwort, no one calls it that, Pulmonaria Majesty, and the leaves are really silver. And if you've ever grown that plant, any of those plants, you know, after they bloom with, again, blue flowers, some of them, there's pink and there's white, you can cut that plant back to about 2 inches, and it'll flush all new growth and you'll have the beautiful foliage again.
Yeah. Well, Ken, we could obviously go on for 3 or 4 days talking about leaves because we're totally leaf mad. But
we have to leave leaves?
We have to leave. Oh, boy. Here he goes again, folks, with the... Oh boy, the jokes. Yeah. So on that note, I'll hang up on you. Nice to speak to you. Thank you so
much. Thank you. I got to post these pictures.
Okay. Bye. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com.
And nice to speak to all the rest of you, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.